Welcome, welcome. This is Dare to Dream, Debbie Dashinger, and I've got a guest here who was last on the show in 2014. So certainly about time to have him back and find out what's going on in his life. I've got Brian Seth Hurst here, and he is the intuitive who bridges the gap with storytelling as well as entertaining and the metaphysical world. And I really think that's a pretty yummy space to be in, and I find them all very complimentary, especially, I have to say, never considered this, especially considering that I came from entertainment myself, that the majority, yeah, of course, ta-da, the majority of my life was spent on that side of the camera as an actress and a singer, theater and TV and film and so forth. And hey, when it came time, I was fully an adult, a full-blown adult, when something changed inside me. And that was a really shocking experience, because from the time really that I even have any memory of time or beingness, that's all I ever wanted and all I ever did. And what I went to summer stock for, and what I went to USC Performing Arts for, and where, how I traveled the world doing. And I was that professionally for a long time. So for me too, there is this really perfect blend of who I was and who I really feel the universe has meant me to be. So here I be.
Well, my confession is I too had that career. That I actually started out as an actor coming out of college, and I studied with an amazing acting teacher, Michael Howard, and I had a casting director, a movie casting director, who became a good friend and took me to dinner, and she said, you know, you could be a great actor, but you probably won't be. You'll probably be a good actor, but you won't be great. And I looked at her and I said, why? And she said, because you just don't want it badly enough. Mm. She said, you're not disciplined. And she said, I'm telling you this now because I don't want you to waste your life on something that you're not wholeheartedly in. And she said, you need to ask yourself the reason you're in this. And of course, the reason I was in it was, well, somebody loved me. Fame, fortune, it was all the wrong reasons. It wasn't about making a difference. However, I'm sure like you, all of those skills that I learned, the ability to be in front of an audience and not be nervous, the ability to think on my feet and not be nervous, all those skills, and even singing. And I took singing for granted. And now I sing all the time, but I miss it. You know, I just miss that full body experience of singing, which is what it always was for me. But she's no longer with us, but I owe her a debt of gratitude because she told me the truth and I didn't get defensive. It's like, how could I defend against the truth? She was absolutely right.
That's so huge. I remember that too. I remember acting teachers telling me that. But I always had that thing in my belly, like, it's going to be me. It's going to be me. I'm going to those Oscars. And it was a service to you because it allowed you at a young age, at a vital age, to create big things in your life, to channel that energy into where you are now. And I have a really interesting question. And just let me tell the folks here who you are so they understand when we're starting, that Brian has built an entire career about storytelling. So many of you love storytelling because you speak and so forth. You're interviewed as well. He does technology innovation. He's the founder and chief storyteller at Storytech Immersive. He's a leading innovator, thought leader, producer, and writer in the industry of virtual reality and immersive storytelling. He's the producer of My Brother's Keeper, and serves as executive producer for Samsung VR Live 360 broadcasting for concerts, music, festivals, and esports. Concurrently, for over 30 years, Brian is also a metaphysician and intuitive who assists people in gaining an enhanced perspective on their lives and their businesses. His book, Whole, is a collection of essays on the challenges of life. In 2018, he launched Rise, a highly personalized metapractical coaching program, which combines his 40 years of business experience with his well-known intuitive skills. In case you would like to look him up, I'm going to give you the sites to do so. You can go to Facebook and look up Whole, W-H-O-L-E, Whole the book. Or you could register on this website at risepartnership.net. And I want to also make mention, for those of you who love the show, go to patreon.com/daretodream to donate to the show. We interview successful, brave, and spirit-based leaders who share their insights. And what would you do if you knew you could not fail? What would it take for you to feel completely free and bold? You can become part of the Dare to Dream podcast. You have a big purpose to fulfill. This I know for sure. If you're listening, you've got big purpose. And at patreon.com/daretodream, you'll help support the show. Dare to Dream will always be free to you. Always be free to you. And if you would like to support the show in flourishing, be sustainable with the best show quality, have the most amazing guests come on the program for $1 a month or the price of a cup of coffee, you can donate. Dare to Dream is absolutely the number one transformation conversation on podcasts today. Go to patreon.com/daretodream. And I want to thank the show's sponsor, Dr. Dane Heer of Access Consciousness. For at least 6 years, he and Access Consciousness have supported and sponsored this show. And you can go to accessconsciousness.com and Dr. Dane Heer, H-E-E-R.com, if you're ready to change your life and get into energy transmission that does everything like that. So easy, right? Everything's energy. So Brian, back to you, my dear. Okay, this is where I'm going to start. 2014, last time you were on the show. What has happened since then? Get us up to date on everything that has encompassed your life and you've gone through and been through.
Wow. Well, one, I'm still here, which to a certain extent I could say is kind of a miracle. I believe in my own story. I have to be totally transparent. I can tell my story, but I don't want to be the effect of my story. I live from the present. But I had come out of a 20-year relationship in 2012, like a week before the book came out, the first book, Whole, came out. And it was like, you know, an astrologer would say, well, this is your second Saturn return, so there's hell to pay. And there was. It was very, very, very difficult. I had some close friends that got me through it. But I also, I had just to surrender to God. And one of the things, Debbie, that came up was I had been sexually abused as a kid. And at age 6, and I never really dealt with it. I had told my parents about it when I was 30 because I remembered it. And I remember my mother saying, do you need help? And I said, no, it's just something that happened. Well, I come to discover years later that for men, many men do not deal with that until they're late 50s. And that's when I started to deal with it. I was able to find a great support group that was, I guess what they call a self-moderating support group of other men, straight and gay, who had been through childhood sexual abuse. And the first thing after my first session, they asked me, you know, you go around the room and you say one word or one sentence about your experience. What I realized was I trusted the men in that room. And frankly, I had never trusted anyone in my life after that had happened. Not my parents, not God. I just didn't. I reached for spirituality. I'd be willing to say that that probably motivated me. But so many people have been abused, like have descended into drug abuse and addiction and problems. And I think I was fortunate in that I was able to hold on to something that was larger than what had happened to me. And as I started to go through that, oh my gosh, I realized all of the circumstances in my life where I had allowed myself to be bullied or talked into things that I was afraid to stand up for myself because it would only mean more hurt. And at the same time, you know, entertainment was great because I was a trained actor, so I could go forward and nothing was the matter. And, you know, I was a vice chair of the Emmy Awards, and I was the chairman of the New Media Council for the Producers Guild, and I could go and I could do this job. But if I went to an event I would be out of there before anybody knew it. I was never the last one to leave. I would never get into a deeper conversation with you, and I would never let anybody in, even in a 20 years of relationship. Also managed to attract someone who was abused and didn't realize the consequences of that abuse. When I started to deal with that, so many things changed. So many things were understandable to me of why I would behave the way I would behave, why I'd go want to go in my house and close the door and not want to come out. It was almost like the little kid in me would over-deliver to clients. Like, we'd agree to do this much and I would do this much. Because it was like, okay, now do you love me? Now do you love me? Now do you love me? And as I started to deal with that, I had asked for a more authentic life and I was getting it. So really the collapse of everything from 2012 to like 2015 was like a death slash rebirth, but all those things that collapsed were the structures that I built to protect myself and my own survival. And once I let those down, I started to realize, one, yes, it served me to that point, but it no longer served me. So I had to give up. I had to let go. The other thing is I had to find a new relationship with spirit, with God. And I had to, as an authority figure, because I had no trust for authority figures after that happened. And even God was an authority figure. So I felt I had to do something to prove something to God in order to be loved, in order to benefit from the blessings that were there. And it took me, I would say there were some seminal things like U.S. Anderson's Three Magic Words, reading that book again and again, Ernest Holmes' Creative Mind, reading that book again and again, confronting my own feelings about my value and my worth, listening, which I still do, to Marianne Williamson's Law of Divine Compensation. And then a guy named Ryan Holiday, who wrote Ego is the Enemy and Obstacle is the Way, two books that I think should be required reading for life. And I started to see myself differently. And then all of a sudden, someone came into my life. I had vowed I was never going to have another relationship. And I want to tell you, if you don't love yourself unconditionally, you certainly are going to be uncomfortable with someone that comes in and all they want to do is love you. And I had created this amazing human being in my life. And you know how rabbits sit and they're like ready to run away at any moment? That's how I was. I was like, this is not real. This is not happening. I'm going to get hurt again. Da, 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 da. And then just having to get over all that because I had asked for these kinds of people to populate my life. So the next step, of course, is, and I continued doing readings all these times because I could get out of my own way. For my intuition, all I did was a little invocation and a prayer. And I didn't have a lot of ego attached to being intuitive. It was just like, okay, that's what I do. And by the way, every time I tried to run away from it, I would get more requests for it. So I was like, okay, this is something you're going to do in your life. And so then, very long story short, I had, as a storyteller, as a writer, which is, you know what, Debbie, you could tell me a million things that you think I can't do in the world. And I would probably say, oh, well, maybe you're right. Like, well, Brian, you can't cook, although I can. You're not a great basketball player, blah, blah, blah. But no one could ever tell me I can't write. It's like it's my salvation. So writing was going to be my salvation. Well, at the same time, I was involved in television and the entertainment industry, and I didn't really love it. It just, I couldn't see the opening. I just couldn't get in the way I wanted to get in, no matter what I'd done. And I always felt like I'd underachieved. But when virtual reality came along and I put on that headset for the first time, and it was Samsung's Gear VR, and I put it on and I watched the Welcome to VR video, I was like in tears. I was like, this is the medium of storytelling that can move people like I've always wanted to move people. And so the first step after that was education. And so I went back to the people that I had worked with, PBS and Showtime, and educated them and ended up like with angels flying above doing My Brother's Keeper for PBS, which is the story of two brothers fighting on opposite sides during the Civil War, who meet each other one last time on the battlefield at Antietam. And attracting these directors that are so, they're young and they're wise and they're experimental and they're free of most ego restrictions. And together we were able to create this amazing piece for PBS that moved people. Like I would watch people come out of the headset in tears. And what we wanted to do was not glorify war, but show what war does to families. And so we didn't know that Donald Trump was going to win the election and that the country would be so divided. But all of a sudden that piece became very timely. And it still, it did so many new things. First slow motion in VR, combined what they call 180 stereoscopic and 360. It was just so innovative and it still stands up 3 years later as a great example. And so I knew where I wanted to be, but something was different. Something was, and that was a huge ego lesson as well, because the piece was released at Sundance. And I can remember watching this piece on Bette Midler after she did The Rose, how she expected her whole career to take off from that movie and nothing happened. Right. I expected everything to happen from My Brother's Keeper, like right away, and nothing happened. And then it was submitted for an Emmy and very few people watched it to vote for it. And I was just like wounded, you know? And then the realization was, wait, you didn't tell the story to get prizes. That's not why you did it. You told the story to tell the story. So think about how this applies to your life. Don't wait for permission to tell story. Have the confidence within you. And two things I've learned through the whole process that I remind myself every freaking blessed day is ABC and LGI. Those are my code words, which is always be calm, because if I'm not, I can have my feelings, but I got to return to center. If I'm not, I'm not going to see any or feel or hear any sort of guidance towards a solution. And the second lesson is LGI, let God in. I can't see everything. So that let go, let God, that's, get frustrated in a situation. What am I frustrated about? Am I frustrated because I'm not being recognized, or my suggestions aren't being taken, or I can't make this happen the way I think it should happen? Or am I there to serve in some capacity and to learn something that I'm not even realizing? So I try to be conscious enough at any time to make that shift. Wow. So yeah. I'm in a great relationship. That wasn't true in 2014. Mm-hmm. I am having the opportunity to write constantly, to interface with really good creative people. I do have a series of affirmations I do, and one is to bring authentic people of integrity and purpose into my life.
Beautiful. Oh my God. It's so interesting. Everything you're sharing, it's so timely. And no accident. I was just having a conversation with one of my closest friends about this very thing. She spent a lot of time last year letting go of people so that the ones who do show up, who do have integrity, who do contribute, are in her life now. So we were talking about that, as well as past relationships. You know,
The ones who don't, I've come to find a way to forgive and bless and have compassion. And I go back to, as a good Jewish boy, I go back to what Jesus said, which was, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. He knew that they were frightened and it was fear that was dictating their behavior. And can I forgive these people who have hurt me? Mm-hmm. Can I not take it personally? Can I understand that fear was at the bottom of it, so I don't make them wrong? Because if I make them wrong, I'm not going to be able to let go of them. They're just going to keep coming back. If they don't come back, then people just like them will come back until I am able to have compassion for other people who are afraid. The same compassion I would want if I was afraid.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very nice compassionate way to look at it, absolutely, instead of having a lot of judgment against people. So I like that being inclusive. And I, this is not a plug, but I have to say, thank you for being so transparent about the sexual abuse. I am literally about to produce, I just sent out a newsletter today to invite authors to come write a chapter in the new anthology book called #MeToo. And I made it very clear, men and women, because I'm clear that the stories are across the board and not just us.
So one in six men, mm-hmm. one in four women. I went to actually had the honor to speak at the Millikan conference last year on VR, and I almost missed my own session because all the others were so interesting. But they had a Me Too panel, and Ashley Judd was on it. It was moderated by Alexa Witt from MSNBC. And I listened very carefully because I wanted to understand. And as a man, I didn't feel I had a right to speak at that moment. I just felt it was about listening. But afterwards, I walked up and I said, I have to Alexa, I said, I have a real concern between what people are calling sexual assault and sexual abuse and how they're defining it, because I feel like it may be diminishing the actual experience of sexual abuse.
What do you mean by that? What?
I mean, sexual harassment is not rape. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'll probably take a lot of flack for that. But if you are assaulted, that is different than being harassed. I mean, yes, emotionally it's very challenging to be harassed. I was used to being called a lot of names, you know, for my religion, for my sexuality. So that's not pleasant. But when someone actually physically abuses you, the wounds, wounds are forever. And they're emotional and they're physical. If someone goes to touch you in the nicest way, you jump because that's what you remember. When I'm hugged really tight by well-meaning people, I just want to scream. So if I've been called a name, chances are I will forget that person. But something imprints on me physically, and I am concerned that, because I want everyone to be taken seriously for their concerns and everyone to be heard. And I don't want Me Too to be used loosely. I want it to mean something. I don't want people to say, oh, everybody's saying that. So it's written off, you know? So that was my concern. And she agreed. She said, yes, we know this and we are looking at it. And you're right. It's something that needs to be looked at. Boy, I never thought this would be about this. But I trust the divine, so whatever happens, happens. So.
Well, it's very powerful, and I'm grateful for your vulnerability. There's so much power in being vulnerable, and I think it's a very – I have nothing to say about it except that I find it really fascinating what you just brought up. I wouldn't have considered it, but it's true. It's a really big umbrella that contains a lot of different moving pieces. And I just feel like it is, somebody said, I was just reading People magazine and somebody was asking Alicia Keys, who's going to be host of the Grammy Awards this year, oh, do you think Me Too is like the conversation of the day or the week? And she's like, no, honey, I think Me Too is the conversation of the century. And I agree. I think it's just the beginning of, you know, possibilities and really much needed change. But for those, I just want to put it out there for anybody that this is touching or you have a story to tell, this is about healing and inspiration. Let me be clear. Go to debbied.net/anthology. It's debbied.net/anthology. And you'll find out more about the Me Too anthology book and how you can contribute. It just feels very important to me. And I do trust Source when I get that kind of a download. So I want to go on the Source train here right now, because it's fascinating to me, Brian, you saying because of the abuse, man, do I relate to. I had not sexual, but parental abuse. And for that, no trust. God, Goddess, no trust. Like, it's on me. If my life's going to work, I'm going to figure out and muscle through. So that was a lot of my stuff for a long time, and great healing around that. How did you come to heal? What was it that allowed you to go from that place of no trust to then allowing an ultimate connection for you to Source?
One, I realized I wasn't the only one, that other people had their stories some of them so much worse than mine, which, by the way, led me to immediately diminish my own experience, which the guys in the group would not let me do, because it's all relative. And when I realized I was in a safe space to start telling my story, and then there was a book I read, Victims No Longer or Victims No More. I cried through every page of that book because I identified with so much that was in that book. I had a willingness to heal. And honestly, Debbie, I just didn't want to be angry. Mm-hmm. I just didn't want to be angry anymore. I just did not want my... And I have this really weird sense of justice because the perpetrators got away with it. So when someone gets away with something, even if it's as minimal as going through a red light, I'm like, they should be arrested. They should be, you know, because I didn't get the justice. So if I don't get justice, what's the alternative? The alternative is forgiveness. I had to take the charge away from it. I had to stop blaming myself because that's the first thing you do is, well, I was just this kind and loving little boy. You know, maybe they saw something that, you know. So, yeah. So I made a real commitment to heal from it. And I made a commitment to be honest and to disclose. I'm in the Producers Guild, and they, I don't know if you remember the movie Spotlight.
Sure.
So I went to the screening of Spotlight, and I was with Andrew, my other half, and I said, I'm about to do something I've never done before. And I stood up in front of 300 people at that screening to thank those people for making that movie. And I said, I'm sure the people in this room who know me don't know this about me. You know, I was abused at age 6. And I am living with the consequences of that. And I can never be unabused. So if I can't change that, how do I love myself and support myself to live with it? Hmm. And I have to say that the work I do in readings and the work I do with other people, the continual getting beyond yourself, like your own stuff, and just serving and supporting other people, that helps a lot because then it's not all about you, you know, you're not the victim. I didn't want to be a victim. I wanted to be at the source of my life, not at the effect of what had happened.
Cool. Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the readings that are offered and some of the coaching that Brian does out into the world today. You're listening to Dare to Dream podcast and video. I am a media visibility strategist, and I help you create a unique and fierce presence through coaching to write your book, getting your book to a guaranteed international bestseller, and getting you booked and scheduled on media interviews. As a certified coach, I help clients become profitable and fulfill their purpose. I have a free gift for you if you go to debbiedashinger.com, and you can receive your gift. How to use free publicity. I'll show you how you can be a go-to expert, the authority, and be interviewed on media today. And for those of you who may just be tuning in after we've started, this is Debbie Dashinger, Dare to Dream, and I'm interviewing Brian Seth Hurst, who's a managing partner, Storytech Immersive, writer, solutionist, and storyteller. You can find him at facebook.com/wholethebook or register at risepartnership.net. So before we get into the readings and coachings, Brian, you've said that your life is like creating art and knowing your craft. Your life is like creating art. That's really interesting. Of course, I've heard life imitates art, art imitates life. What is that for you?
Wow. I didn't even remember saying that. I think you got to know the instrument, just like acting. You got to know your instrument. You got to know what you're capable of. You have to be able to be objective in the evaluation of your skills, which means you got to be able to remove your ego from it. You got to know when you need help, like if it's bigger than what you just offered. I'm thinking now, should I talk to Debbie about that? Am I ready for that in my life? I've got to put that on the meditation bulletin board and have some consideration of that. What I trust for me is inspiration. As a writer, when I'm writing, regardless of the medium. You asked me earlier before we started, do I channel stuff? You know, would that be a channeled work? I think it's all channeled. I think when I create a character, I know exactly what that character wants to say and how they want to appear in the world. And, you know, I have an anthology series I'm working on right now specifically for VR that's all about moral relativism. And the situations I'm told about, you know, like it'll be in this place. But then the characters, I kind of let them just speak. So I think any writer that writes dialogue or even a book knows that the characters are speaking through them. Mm-hmm. And I then trust that whatever the spirit was that brought through those characters will bring through the Devadasingers of the world to get those characters out of the world. I believe that flow. It's like I'm not going to stop and say, okay, now what do I do? I go, now what do I do? And I try and recognize that I'm not in it by myself. So, and as far as the RISE coaching program and the readings, those are prompts. One of the skills I've had to learn for myself is when I hear a prompt and when I should follow that prompt. Not like, oh, there's a good idea, but that's a prompt, which is what happened with the coaching program, which was your clients, you see this need in clients that you're reading. So you just do you can do an intuitive reading and then they go off, but what's the follow-up? And you may have brought up issues during that reading. Who's going to help them with those issues? You know, how are they going to work through it? Can you help them? And then the analogy of coaching with athletes, like you can have that natural talent and that natural ability, but you'd want somebody who walked that road first and was experienced that would say, okay, your hand is this way on this jump. It needs to be this way. I want you to concentrate on that for a moment until you do it so many times that it takes its place, that it's, you know, that the adjustment that you've made sticks. So then the questionnaires that became part of this program, because I said, well, I'm only going to do 5 sessions, right? I'm going to help people realize what the blocks are, what their vision is, and what the opportunity is in 5 sessions. What are those 5 sessions? Then all of a sudden I had all these like 15 questionnaires. There's a lot of homework. People really have to be committed to grow. That's all I ask, is that you're committed to grow and you do the homework. And when you come for a reading or a session, all I ask is that your mind, your ears, and your heart are open and that you're committed to grow and you don't give your power to me. You don't give your power away to me. You are the source. You and God are working together. I'm just here to coach. And so that's how all of that comes about. It's following those prompts. So I was like, oh, great. You know, the coaching program, I've coached about between 12 and 15 people over the last year experimenting to see how it works. And it was like, I literally heard, oh, it's time to move to the next level. The next level is the book. Well, so my question, this is exactly what happened. I was like, if you're going to have somebody do a coaching book, they're going to be stuck by themselves without a coach. How is that going to work? And then I hear it's a buddy book. So 2 people do this together and they learn to coach and support each other. Or there are partnership groups. And it was like, great. So RISE Partnership. So that's what gave RISE to risepartnership.net. So it's like, and if I hit that moment, Debbie, and I'm sure you do the same thing. If I hit that moment where I don't know, I go, hey, I don't know. It'll come. It'll come. Just let me relax about it. I'm not going to fight for it. Because if I fight for it, my hands aren't open, so I can't receive. So I'm just going to go, okay, what is it?
Oh, this is awesome. I love your coaching program, and I love the elements you're talking about. Accountability has saved my life. When I've desired to create something and resisted it at the same time, it's like anti-magnetism. And I've used accountability. Like, I'm just going to text you every day and tell you what I'm doing. And I'd be too ashamed to text someone and go, I didn't do anything.
It's you know how I've told you this before, how Hold came to be was I literally heard you're going to write a book in 30 days. And I knew, you know, I would rather eat cookies than write a book in 30 days. So I called Terry Bergman, very intuitive friend. She's been the intuitive that I go to for my whole life since I met her when I was 18. I said, Terry, I want to send you a chapter a day so I finish this book in 30 days. And I did. Sometimes I got it in at 11:59, but I sent a chapter a day. And that accountability was the reason that book got done.
Yeah, 1,000%. So this sounds like a very powerful coaching program. And I'm going to guess that as you coach people through these 5 sessions to help them identify the blocks and then to heal them, that you're also using your intuitive gifts to see the matrix of what's happening.
It is a kind of a combination of the experiences I've had in my own life and the intuitive ability that I have used for my whole life, even before I started doing it officially. And I believe that any great coach has to be intuitive. I mean, I don't care if they think they're intuitive or not. They are, because what they're doing is they're setting themselves aside for a moment. They're accessing their experience, but they're observing. And as they observe, they have, if their ego's out of the way, they have a vision of what's really going on. So it's combining practical exercises, practical experience, and practical to-do items that are not crazy. It's examining things that, you know, the final exercise in the fifth session, because each session builds upon the other. It's like, and I didn't plan that, it's just the way it came through. But the final session before, now it's the state of your life. So now you actually write at the beginning, you write this state of your life. And at the end, after five sessions, you write the state of your life. It's like, that's just objective. But the final exercise before that is, and I know other people have done this, but I really require people to do it, which is, I want you to write the feature magazine story about you.
Wow.
And
what does that look like? Can you give us
I want you to imagine the project that you've done. So I have one client who is a space designer for high net worth clients. And I said, what is the project that you did that got the world's attention? And what is the story they're going to tell about you and this project? And I need your picture, and I need a headline, and I only need 1,200 words, but if you want to write more, you can. Very hard exercise for some people.
I'll bet it is. And have people written that journalism piece about themselves and then had it come to fruition?
Yeah, I've watched it with one client. It actually happened. It happened so fast. And it was like, you know, I was like, well, that might be 5 years out, because there's another exercise in there on possibility thinking, because most people can be limited in their thinking. So you say dare to dream. This is dare to look at whatever's possible. So yeah, that does happen. And I think that's part of the purpose of it. And mind you, Debbie, I wouldn't ask you to do an exercise as a coaching client unless I put myself through it. So it's kind of like when the people that draw your blood have to stab each other in their training, you know, so that they know what it feels like. It's like, yeah, I had to go through all of those exercises, and not all of them are pleasant, because you're really coming face to face with yourself and whatever's in the way between the essence of who you are, regardless of how it got there. You can't move it till you see it. You can't walk around it. You can't walk over it. You can't even go through it unless you see it.
Hmm. Wow. Incredible stuff. So, all right, we're going to head into the readings here. And I'm just going to remind you, subscribe to the show. It'll come right in your inbox. Dare to Dream is available for you. Leave us a 5-star review. We have lots of you who follow us and email. And go to patreon.com/daretodream. You'll get a lot of free bonus gifts there when you sponsor or contribute $1 or more a month. The show, again, is sponsored by Dr. Dane Heer and Access Consciousness. They create energetic healings immediately. It's a very powerful stuff. And for those of you who are entrepreneurs or small business folks, there's an amazing platform out there. I use it. Lewis Howes uses it. Everybody, kind of who's anybody today, uses Thinkific. This is an amazing platform for you to put your products, your programs, your online courses, and make passive income. It is so easy, drag and drop, and so beautiful, frankly. It's an all-in-one platform, so you can easily create, market, and sell. And if you would like your own discount, Dare to Dream, we've got a special one just for Dare to Dream people from Thinkific. Go to thnk.cc/deb. Check it out. And again, Debbie Dashinger, Dare to Dream. And I'm interviewing Brian Seth Hurst, facebook.com/wholethebook, or register at risepartnership.net. So Brian, let's go there. I would like to have a little bit of experience of what your intuitive superpowers are.
I wouldn't call them superpowers, because I don't possess them. They just kind of come through. So if I look at where you are right now, so, wow. So you have reached a level of mastery where everything, it's still challenging because of the work that you do and the volume of the work that you do, but you've been asking to like move up to the next level. Like you want to play a bigger game. You're not sure what that game is. And you're wondering, how do I maintain what I have while I build this bigger game? And what is that bigger game? So it's kind of asking you to, you're kind of asking you to return to the essence of your purpose. And you're looking for a larger expression of that purpose. It's like, you've finally gotten your value. So you finally understand what value is. You've been communicating that to other people. And now it's, and you've been very, very visible. But there's this part of you that visibility has actually sacrificed part of your personal life. So a lot of energy has gone to being visible and to helping others. And you're turning now to actually look at the quality of life. And by quality of life, I just don't mean the physical quality of life. You actually may be looking at living circumstances and the possessions that you have and getting rid of things, but you're also looking at the level of spiritual quality in your life, which shifts you back to you having life rather than life having you. So you're about to reorganize things. It doesn't mean you're not going to continue with a successful business and that business might be more successful. But it means moving up to a different level of, I'd say, effective delegation. Maybe it's in training others to do what you do. But there is this shift out to the right, which actually takes you further out into the world. So before that happens, you have to be prepared for it. You have to, there is this, you know, there's this kind of gap right now where you're not quite sure how to best care for yourself or what the next thing is to do. And you know, you're waiting. You're actually waiting for some sort of signal, but the waiting is meant, this gap, this space is meant to retrain you in self-care. Like how, if I'm going to run a marathon, how am I going to train for that marathon? Well, if I'm going to go further out into the world, how do I need to condition myself spiritually, emotionally, physically, mentally, to make this larger journey, which, by the way, will require you coming out of what you consider to be a safe space. This is a space you know and very familiar, but you want to get out. It's like someone who's been in the house for a long time and says, oh, you know what? I want to go to Rome. So you have to figure out how to get to Rome, but first you have to get out of the house. So this is like you've asked for this expansion. You've kind of prayed for this expansion. You are weighing what the balance is. In other words, how much of Debbie has to be out in the world, or what pieces of you are there? What do you reserve for the self? Or you just get bigger to contain it all? And what does that mean? And how do you set up the support systems for that? You're also looking at, can I ask how old you are? Are you willing to say that?
Oh my goodness, my goodness, my goodness. I've never said it on.
Okay, you don't have to say it. Let me just say it. It's like your life is divided into thirds.
Uh-huh.
The first third was ego-driven. The second third was self-discovery driven. The third is service in a big way. But all the value that you contribute to the service comes back to you. So the things that you were afraid of that would not be taken care of before will actually come easier to you. But the idea of not having anything to prove and being able to follow the journey and not being at the effect of the world and not even taking the negativity that's in the world as a consideration, but saying, well, the way to solve the negativity is through not making it wrong, but coming up with solutions that are based in love and based in the positive nature of everyone and being able to direct them towards that positive nature.
Brilliant. Oh my goodness. Hello. Yes. Yes. All of that. And I'm so curious, that piece of self-care. Let me just say, I do have an accountability partner right now, and he just texted me right before I started this interview. Debbie, what is it going to take for you to treat yourself like you would one of your clients? Because I had to text him. I have not been meditating, and I had committed to meditating, and So I know this is a thing for me, not just meditation, but let's talk about self-care. I get my ass to the gym. I'm really good with that. I think I eat pretty decent, but I want to know what you mean.
Okay.
What
I think you're coming from self-care like this, like it's a burden, like it's a chore, like it's not an act of self-love. It's an obligation. And I think there's something in the past that says in order to be good enough, these are the things you have to take care of. Whereas the shift that's coming is you're actually coming in from spirit and you're actually welcoming the opportunity to care for yourself. It's the part of you that feels you got to serve everybody else dinner before you eat. And that's the part that might feel less than or not enough. So you'll feed these people first and then you won't have time or you'll get the scraps. So I think putting yourself first in self-care might have some selfishness associated with it, some idea that this is selfish or that you would be called selfish. So you have to give the others first before you take care of yourself. And the good news is that you're shifting that anyway. So you can tell your accountability buddy that, you know, you're looking for a more loving way to do that self-care rather than the judgment. And to ask for support from him is to say, his text can be, why don't you treat yourself the way you treat your clients? But I would rather see him text, how are you loving yourself today? What have you done for you today?
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. That's a huge change. Just to say it like that, I can feel it like.
You know, I just want to talk about perspective and shifting perspective. When I was in the fifth grade, we were playing basketball and my best friend at the time said to me, why are you such a spaz? Why can't you, and literally use that word, why can't you do this? And I said, because I'm not good at sports. And he goes, you are the best dancer in school. Why can't you just think of this like dancing? Boom. Once I thought of basketball as choreography, I got really good.
Dude, that's an awesome example. I love that. You know, when I went to USC, I had to go to dance 5 days a week at 8 a.m. And here I am with these people who, amazing dancers, their legs are going up here. And here I am, like, I felt like the spaz, totally. You know, Jewish girl from New York, like, oh my God, I can sing, I can act, but please, the dance thing, I had no clue. And I went through so much suffering. And one day it occurred to me, oh, music. I know how to count. I can count and learn the steps. And within 6 months, I was, when I say the best person in class, I don't mean as a dancer. What I did is I learned to move very well and present myself beautifully on stage. I was so good and quick at learning choreography that I had dancers, really good accomplished dancers, coming to me and saying, what were those steps? Show me that. I could see you have it. I was like, oh, it was.
So that thing that you found.
Yeah.
That is what I work to do in coaching, to shift your perspective. And the truth is you got whatever that barrier was that was the thinking, I can't dance. You can't do it. You can't dance. Your shift in thinking allowed you to get centered and get into yourself. And you know, as a singer, if you're not using your whole body, you're not singing, you know? So it's like, what is this instrument? You asked about life as an art. What is this instrument? What's getting in the way of the flow? My head.
And so your friend says this to you, you are the best dancer. You think of it.
Like, and I was.
And what happened with basketball? Were you then a really accomplished basketball player?
I got really good. And fortunately for me, at the time, through the first year of junior high, I grew faster than anybody else. So I was tall. But then everybody got taller than me and basketball became completely uninteresting.
Ah, interesting. Well, how powerful. What a powerful way to work with your people. And I'm curious about you, Brian. What do you do on a daily basis to ground yourself or as self-care?
I resist, just like you, and do it anyway. My mornings are, I get up and what I usually do is write first thing, like write in a journal, write of what I'm feeling. And then I usually grab some sort of reading before I meditate. So what was today's? Today's was A Course in Miracles. I Rest in God was today's lesson. And I don't do them in order. I just, what am I going to grab today? And I sort of trust what I'm going to grab. when I, after that, I have a series, 2 pages that of custom affirmations that I've done for myself that address my weak links, you know, where I know that I will fall down if I don't affirm it. And they come from different books. Then I will meditate. So that's usually about the first hour of my day. And then I'm able to handle the day. Now, if it gets frustrating during the day, what I do is I will look for a moment or a time where I can just stand up, walk away, and just take a breath. And I tell you, the two big prayers I use are the prayer of Jabez, which is, when it comes time to say it, I can never say it. It's in my head every day. It's so automatic. Enlarge my territory. Oh, that you would indeed bless me and enlarge my territory, that your hand would be with me, that you would keep me from evil, that I may not cause pain. And each one of those segments has a different meaning and a different energy. You can read Bruce Wilkinson's book on that, Bruce H. Wilkinson. And then Marianne Williamson has, out of the Course in Miracles, where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say and to who?
Wow.
And then at the end of her book, and I'd have to run up and get it, but it's like, nothing binds you except your fears. Nothing stops you except your beliefs. There's like 3 things at the end of that book. And I read those to remind myself, because the bottom line of all of this is how I think is what I will create. That's it. Ancient wisdom. The Chinese said it. The Jews said it. The Catholic Book of Mysticism says it. That Tibetan Book of the Dead says it. Ernest Holmes says it. Marianne Williamson says it. I say it. So it's your as you think. Wayne Dyer said it. Change your thoughts, change your life. That's why I'm a Taoist, thanks to Wayne Dyer. So that's my day. And then when I get to the gym, the program I love now, not hate, but when I get to the gym, and I have these now, which I never had before. When I get to the gym, I spend 10 minutes on the Stairmaster, but what's in my ears is an audiobook. So it will be either Marianne's book, it might be Ryan Holiday, it might be, it's just something that is playing subconsciously while I'm doing everything else.
Wow.
That's it. And that's what's working today, and it might not work tomorrow. I may have to try something new.
Yeah, well, self-care can shift as we do too. We can add pieces and let go. And I like all that mindfulness. You know, we're at the end of the show, but I really want to get these last 2 questions in. For those of us who speak on stage, for those of us who are authors, for those of us who are interviewed, storytelling is essential. You are a master storyteller. This is your domain. What are some key takeaways about storytelling that you can offer that might be new for us to learn?
Well, other than story structure, and I would send you to a woman named Allison Norrington of Story, Story Central. Just look up Allison Norrington, you'll find it. Other than structure, it doesn't matter. The more honest you are, the less good you try to be, the more willing you are to share who you are, whether you're writing characters, because every character reflects a part of yourself, the more willing you are to let the same force that created you being here on the planet come through you to tell the story and to create the story. I'd say that's part one. Part two is craft. I mean, you really have to work at craft. And the way you do it, the way you work at it, is by doing it. So just like any... if you set out to be the best gymnast in the world, you're going to have to work at those skill sets and that craft. And then you have enough that you can trust it, that everything can just come through you. So I think craft is very important. When people say, well, how is telling a story? Doesn't VR change the way you tell a story? And I go, well, it's not the what of the story that changes, it's the how. And there are many different tools in terms of storytelling. So you get to find out the best way to tell your story. And whether you're on stage or you're pitching a story or you're writing your story, you ain't doing it alone. Some energy, some inspiration, something is coming through you. The more you trust that, the higher the level goes.
Beautiful. Okay.
I hope that made sense.
Very much so. 100%. I really like the element of getting out of the way, doing it so you hone your craft, getting out of the way.
And don't worry if you're good enough, because a lot of people will have an opinion. I'm convinced that true artists know when they're getting away with stuff and know when they're not.
So this is Dare to Dream, Brian, Seth Hurst. What are you next, Dare to Dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
Wow. You know, I used to have it all laid out. Now I just want to tell stories that inspire, let people see the possibilities and make a difference in the world. Because I believe we find out who we are by the stories we tell. And I just want to keep telling stories, regardless of the medium. So if you ask me what my dream is, it is to produce, write, and direct in any medium that gets the story out into the world, and to bring down any obstacles within myself that could prevent that from happening. It's just to share.
I think we're so lucky to have you here. I've heard you interviewed over the years, and one of the things that stands out to me is you talked about having had a difficult childhood. And
only from the abuse. I had great parents with great values. I just wasn't able to communicate that. My dad had one dream for me, and that didn't work out so well. I had another dream for me. My mom, I was very fortunate in the parents that I chose. So I didn't suffer for want of anything in my childhood. It's just the abuse that really threw everything, you know, into tilt.
Yeah, I appreciate that clarification. Yeah, that's good. It's important, actually. And I
had a great sister.
My point is that even despite that, because that colors one's life, it has a lot of power sometimes. And the fact that you have become who you are, that you have the personality you do, that's the thing that I'm so attracted to you in you, Brian, is this, I mean, you're so animated. You're so interesting. You are such a great storyteller, and you're doing such amazing things with your life. So I feel blessed that you were able to
thank you.
In a way, supersede that to be here with us in the way that you are.
Oh my gosh. I just think I never think of it in terms of that. I just think it costs a lot to not be who you are.
Yeah.
And God gave me something, gave me gifts. I would be a fool not to take those blessings and use those gifts. And the only way the only way we understand each other is when we're brave enough to tell our stories. And not to portray, I don't want to portray myself as a victim in any way. It's something, everything that's happened to me has happened to me. It's something that happened. It's not who I am. It's something that happened, but it's not who I am.
I end today's show with a poster I saw that got my attention that reads the 7 rules of life. 1, let it go. Never ruin a good day by thinking about a bad yesterday. 2, ignore them. Don't listen to other people. Live a life that's empowering to you. 3, give it time. Time heals everything. 4, don't compare. The only person you should try to beat is the person you were yesterday. 5, stay calm. It's okay not to have everything figured out. Know that in time, you'll get there. 6, it's on you. Only you are in charge of your own happiness. And finally, 7, smile.
Life with all of those.
Yes.
That's brilliant.
Life is short, so enjoy it while you have it. You had a breath today that woke you up and is taking you through the day, so enjoy it. Be fully present today. Next week on Dare to Dream, I'm featuring Carrie Samuel. She's the most amazing numerologist, and she will do readings. It's amazing. So you want to tune in for this big transformation conversation. You can subscribe to all of these interviews at youtube.com/DebOnTheRadio, and you can watch visually my guests and myself in conversation. Again, go to DebbieDashinger.com so you can learn how to get free publicity right away and get yourself booked on media as the go-to expert. Your online platform so you can sell your online programs and make passive income is at thnk.cc/deb. Thanks for joining us on Dare to Dream today. And remember, the secret of success is having the courage to begin in the first place.